politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots and Minutemen, standing at the ready to fight anew for life, liberty, property, as if it's all on the line. Here at CR Podcast, we don't have to act it out because, believe it or not, we actually believe in our own talking points, believe in the gravity of the situation, and understand that there is a need for men who understand the times and know what ought to be done. And that's what we're going to try to provide for you those men, those policies, those candidates, where we can. It's Friday, capping off the end of a week that is a very teachable week on the GOP being a controlled opposition to the Democrats, and MAGA being a controlled opposition within a controlled opposition. And that was perfectly on display last night. Now, I was planning on only focusing today on what affirmatively we should be doing. And we're going to get to that with our special guest, what I believe is possibly the most important bill we could push in every red state, the biggest force-multiplying bill on economy, but it really reflects social policy, our future living, all about money and currency, how to pull the rug out from under the Federal Reserve and actually evacuate ourselves from the sinking Titanic that we're all on. This is a serious issue. What do we do about the government, fascism, and socialism if they control the money? But these are one of many ideas we focus on here that our colleagues do not focus on. They don't have an answer for you for the simple question of, what do we do? What do we do if we don't have a team on the field that represents us, that's going to evacuate us from this morass that we all claim to be based and know what time it is and recognize it, but then fail to do anything about it and then actually place our hopes in what is subverting it? So in order to build up to our main course, I'll just comment briefly. I wasn't even planning on doing it. I don't watch the State of the Union show anymore. It's all a joke. No one cares. But it is very important in the sense that both parties wore themselves on their sleeve last night, perfectly embodied the situation. You know, my colleagues are all going to be laughing at Biden. Oh, dementia. Oh, he was slurring his words. He was angry. But you know what? I don't know mental health. I don't understand what drugs we have, why sometimes he's completely not lucid, but other times he kind of is. And last night was more the latter, whether you like it or not. But the point is, he embodies the Democrat Party. He embodies the demonic left. In that even their most senile guy, 81 years old, that's struggling with drugs to keep it together, he was able to perfectly articulate their worldview, show passion and anger behind it, and dedication and resolution to actually pursue and achieve those objectives. Whether it's promoting Hamas, boots on the ground for America to open up shipping lanes for Hamas while Hamas's cousins shut down our shipping lanes, whether it's the transgender stuff, whether it's the demonic socialism and the green energy and open borders, he covered it all. It's not like by accident, Biden one day scores points for our side, the other team. He by accident is off script and winds up promoting a conservative objective. That has never happened. My friends, Joe Biden is more lucid than my colleagues. They're the ones with dementia. They're the ones with ADHD. They're the ones who can't remember anything from 3 minutes ago and can't focus on right in front of us primaries and bills and budget battles right in front of us. Oh, the border. Literally, as Republicans on the bill that matters are funding the invasion, including this coming week when they're going to do the DHS bill, which, thanks to them selling out on the first minibus full of garbage, it actually would make it easier for them to fight on the second half. The VA is funded. The national parks are funded. A lot of stuff is already funded. Just fight on DHS. They won't do it. And that's where we get to the second half. Katie Britt's response perfectly embodied the GOP. Putting on an act, fake crying, fake outrage, broadly talk about our, you know, our rough talking points, but not things like the vaccines, of course, but the things that you're allowed to talk about, broadly indulge them in a fake, contrived, theatric way that sounds cringe. And this is what bleeds through to the voters. Voters are attracted by a strong force, a strong showing of force. Ecclesiastes 8:11. Because the sentence of the deed of evil is not executed swiftly, therefore the heart of the children of men are encouraged to do evil. Meaning, if you say something, this is terrible, but then you hold back and you allow the invasion to go on past 5 budget bills and you continue, you look like an idiot. You don't believe in anything. The left, they don't debate, they don't equivocate, they don't vacillate. There's no diffidence in their actions. They do what needs to be done, and they do it swiftly. And that's what Biden's doing. You know what? 4 polls just came out showing Biden up. So it just shows you the whole thing is, you know, that they, my colleagues are like, Biden's going to self-destruct. He's senile. Ha, ha, ha. Look at the libs. Da-da-da-da-da. Just sit by, and Trump's going to win, and he's going to be amazing, and we don't have to do anything else. And I'm like, no. None of that is guaranteed, but here is what's guaranteed. If we don't focus on primaries and red states and actually things within our dominion, we are screwed. So, you know, Biden versus Katie Britt is the perfect embodiment of the same GOP we've experienced our entire lives. But then now we have another layer, another cherry on top of that crap sandwich, where there will be a portion of my colleagues that in addition to be, oh, Biden's terrible, ha, 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 they'll comment that Katie Britt was pathetic. Except here's the thing. So what's their solution? So we don't have a team on the field. So rather than coming over to our way of thinking and focusing on, like we talked about yesterday, Indiana, where they're grabbing kids from parents who won't use demonic pronouns, they're just white-pilled over Trump. So Trump's the solution. Well, let's talk about that. That was on full display last night. You see, probably the most demonic thing that Biden said last night, and by the way, it's echoing a sentiment that was expressed on CNBC and several shows. They're now talking about Pfizer getting into cancer treatments. They are so confident in their evil, and they're so confident that we don't have a movement to oppose them, and they are right, that they could call their shot in front of our eyes and say, yeah, you better believe cancer's spiraling. It's not like they're denying it. And they're like, the same COVID vaccine that healed COVID, it's going to heal, it's going to cure cancer. That's literally what Biden said. They're mocking us now. I mean, could you imagine this thing likely killed 18 million short term, and then now there's nobody alive in oncology who will not tell you we have, you know, not just the general trend of more cancers over the last generation or two, but since 2021, just out of control, both qualitatively but also quantitatively with the types of cancers, the turbocharge, the sudden cancers, the 3 to 5 weeks from diagnosis to death. It is the most demonic thing that has ever been foisted upon humanity. Even people like me have not fully given over the extent of what this is doing. And Trump takes the most demonic part of what Biden said, tacitly agrees with it, and then demands credit for it. Yeah, you know, that was my vaccines. It ended COVID. That, my friends, is where we are politically right now. That is what all the people who say that they're based and that they recognize the uniparty and they recognize the patheticness of Republicans. And by the way, Katie Britt is exclusively in the Senate. She voted for Mitch McConnell. She's another one of those. She was a lifelong, basically a Democrat, did nothing for us. Trump, it's 100% because of Trump's endorsement. He betrayed Mo Brooks. Loyalty runs in one direction. Pathetic. Pathetic. Created COVID, then created the cancer-inducing vaccines, then say it's going to cure it, and Trump agrees with it. So you'll find some people making fun out of Katie Britt, oh, the rhinos, and this, the Republicans, PC, pathetic, the tone. But their answer is not, okay, so then, A, let's get Trump, let's pressure Trump to the right, let's get him on message, let's stop covering for him, we have 8 months until the election, let's get a ground game in place. Let's actually pick a fight on the border, which is 90-10 with suburban voters, which we could do tomorrow. It's not too late for the DHS still has not been funded. They did six bills, but we could still pull it back. Trump could be pressured. If all these guys would demand that Trump stop supporting Johnson, we could have a fight on that. And you could win over suburban voters. And worse comes to worse, you at least take refuge in red states and fight on them. But we have a Mississippi primary next week, and Trump has endorsed Roger Wicker, so he'll probably win going away. This is where we are. It is indefensible what my colleagues are doing. It is indefensible. And again, it's not just an issue here, an issue there. If you take Trump's messaging together, the Bud Light stuff, the endorsements, he was also opposing banning TikTok last night. Like, that's what, I don't know what sort of corporate angle is there. What it should demonstrate to anyone is not only is it far from a sure thing this guy has a prayer of winning, but if he were to win, we are so screwed. Okay? I'm not getting the debate, you know, game theory, is it worse to have Biden, is it worse to have him? That's not my point. My point is we've completely lost control over him. What is self-evident, you would think, okay, we're not going to have a reckoning on COVID, but it'll kind of lie low. No, unsolicited, he takes every opportunity to promote the vaccines. What that clearly demonstrates is they have zero control over him. It's either a mixture of them not making those phone calls to him privately, or even if they do, it doesn't matter because he's so screwed up between he himself being the problem and the bad guys around him have more clout. That is the truth. I've had a lot of private conversations this week. Everyone knows that to be true. So, Daniel, what do we do? What do we do? Well, I'm going to tell you in a minute the type of things we should be putting our energy, time, and political capital into. But in general, again, it's red state primaries. It's red state legislative sessions. It's really, as we see with the child family services, you don't even have to wait for a primary or an election or even a legislative session. Every day is an election. Every day there are bad things going on in red states, but good things could happen and we could pressure the governors and expose them. We could be doing this. We could be harnessing the influence we have over these people to make a difference. And yes, if my colleagues would fight on the budget and Johnson and take the fight to Trump and Johnson, we could have a government shutdown over a 90-10 issue. But they don't want to do that. It's just, ha ha ha, Joe Biden, own the libs, like, you know, get involved in the memeing, say Lakin Riley's name. By the way, that's what these clowns did. They sold us out and then they passed the standalone bill yesterday. By the way, even the standalone bill, even if it would pass, so originally they didn't even put a private cause of action. So it basically said, ICE shall detain criminal aliens. Well, that's current law and they don't do it. Chip Roy and Dan Bishop had to fight under threat of opposing the bill to at least put in a cause of action that so people could sue when they don't enforce it because they're not going to enforce it. But they were willing to go along without even that. Now, even with it, it doesn't have teeth because it's not going to pass the Senate. You have to use the budget bill as leverage. This is the fraud they are. But even the people who claim to recognize that, and this is the problem. We always had a problem with normie Republican voters. The GOP establishment wielded its influence by starting at the left-wing goalpost of the GOP electorate and then moving therein to the right in terms of trying to gain people. Trump is the same thing, except what's dangerous about him is that he starts from the right goalpost and moves in. He mesmerizes the very sort of voters that we typically relied upon to fight the uniparty, and now they're all white-pilled. Ha la la la. You know, my buddy Pedro Gonzalez perfectly encapsulated this. He wrote the following on Twitter yesterday. He said, Steve Bannon called Steve Daines Mitch McConnell's bitch and a gutless coward. Then Trump not only endorsed Daines to succeed McConnell as the GOP Senate leader, but also said he looks forward to working with McConnell. MAGA Mike Johnson sidelined the Freedom Caucus in the government funding fight and instead relied on Democrats to get the spending bills across the finish line. But Trump supports him. The right is so distracted by the Democrats, so engrossed in populist kayfabe that it doesn't notice any of these things, which is why it always loses in the end. And it's perfectly said. And that's why in Europe, the right has always been ineffective and pathetic. This is why we allow Kristi Noem to screw over landowners. All the things we talked about yesterday, Oklahoma, Wyoming, Indiana, things we could be doing. But then finally, there's another action item, which is simply 8 months before an election. It's still technically the primary. He's the presumptive nominee, but it's technically not a general election. It's a primary. Hold him accountable. Pressure him publicly, because clearly privately it's not working. I promise you, if the top names, you name the top 30 MAGA influencers, they all got together and started, you know, gently but firmly pushing him on the endorsements, pushing him on Mike Johnson and the budget bills and government shutdown, pushing him on the vaccines, I guarantee you, you would get some results. But they don't do it.
Daniel, no, it's not the time we need Trump to win.
Okay, so first of all, if you think that Trump being retarded and unelectable and just his demeanor is just off kilter, that's not going to turn off swing voters, but somehow us just gently getting him to stay on message policy-wise is going to create too much of a problem for him to win. You're retarded. That's number one. And number two is, the time to have this is in the primary, but you shut it down in the primary. We couldn't do it in the primary because you refused to make him answer for any of this. Because the problem was, anytime we tried to bring this up, it was viewed as, well, we can't criticize Trump because the windfall would go to Ron DeSantis and we can't have that. That was the problem. Okay, so that's why I'm saying Ron is out of the picture. You got your nomination. He's got it. But on the other hand, this is not October. We have plenty of time. Now is the time to prod him. You're doing him no favors. And more importantly, you're doing your stated agenda no favors by remaining utterly silent. Let me explain to you what a movement looks like. Let me explain to you, and that was on full display last night, the contrast, and then we'll get to our guest, because I don't want to waste too much time on things we can't do anything about. So, increasingly, we let in Hamas into this country. Okay, we let in a bunch of them, and they've now become critical mass, where they're no longer quiet, but they're acting like they do in Europe and making demands. You have Joe Biden, who has been raping Israel. Like, I mean, putting sanctions on Jews living in Judea and Samaria, giving Gaza a bunch of aid, using every international pressure against Netanyahu, working together with Netanyahu's own opposition party to go and screw him. There have been 200 Israeli soldiers have likely lost their lives because they were too scared of Biden to do airstrikes, so they went in on the ground into a viper's nest. I mean, it has been really, really bad. And yet, these guys strike a hard bargain. They're like, that's not good enough. See, Muslims don't understand America, right? Because they're new to the country. And they don't understand that saying the slaughter of 1,200 Jews, raping them, baking babies in an oven while they rape the mother is not really socially acceptable in America. I mean, not yet. So you have to kind of pretend to be pro-Israel. So they're upset that Biden rhetorically was like, Israel has a right to defend itself and, you know, condemned October 7th. They're like, no, we want you to actively support Hamas. In other words, Biden's not going to get up there and say Hamas is awesome. He'll say the Palestinian Authority is awesome, which is the same thing. But, you know, he's got to be one step removed. And that's not enough for them. So they lodge a protest and they, you know, vote no confidence in Michigan, a little bit northern Virginia, where we let in a bunch of these hyenas. And then just last night, on the way to the State of the Union address, they block his way. By the way, that's obstructing official proceedings. Of course, not a single one will get arrested. But and then he gets up there and he delivers. He delivers. He is promising to create a port, send American troops and I guess the Army Corps of Engineers to Gaza to fight for them and evade Israel's blockade. Which is not even a blockade, because they're sending in a bunch of aid, and now we're parachuting in troops and in aid. And by the way, the parachutes didn't work, fell from the sky and killed five Palestinians. If that's not a metaphor, I don't know what is. But my friends, that's what a movement is. You strike a hard bargain. And that's the beauty of the Democrats. My colleagues are right. Biden's a nothing. He's senile. He's this and that. And yet still he delivers. Democrats don't need a charismatic figure. Since Obama, Democrats have not had a transcendent figure. If you look down the ballot, they don't have any real talent. They really don't. But they don't need it, because they have a movement of activists and donors and professionals and talkers and policy people and strategists who all share the goals. They have a 50-state strategy. They have a 3,000-county strategy. There's not a single subcommittee hearing of a single county or state government, even in a deep red area, that they don't show up and try to fight for and testify. They're on top of everything. That's what a movement is. So you could have Biden and still succeed. We could have our greatest asset and we won't succeed unless we build a movement. And that's where I want to get to our next guest. So folks, what do? We are literally on a sinking Titanic. So the default position is death. It's not like we can meme our way out of it, own the libs way out of it. We can't make fun out of the media out of it. We can't hope for the best out of it. We can't just hope that somehow, you know, after four losing elections, we'll automatically win this one. And then even if we would win it, somehow the policies would change when you're not even changing the orientation of the GOP. Obviously, all roads lead towards what we keep saying, take the parts of our country where fundamentally we don't need to change hearts and minds to win. People really agree with us. And, you know, it's significant swaths up to at least half the states. But heck, I'll take a few as our Noah's Ark and actually elect the right people, focus on the legislative sessions, focus on the right things. And that's all we could do. But there is a broader problem, and that's the economic issues. So socially, you could kind of wall off your states. We don't have the global warming agenda. We won't have the transgender stuff. We won't do this, the anti-life stuff. And we're working on all that stuff. But the problem is when it comes to the economy, we're all on the same sinking ship because the government controls the money. Everything's the Federal Reserve. We all know that. Why is it that we now live a life where, and it's only getting worse, increasingly, even with two salaries, you can't afford basic living anymore. Where, and this is why they're trying to, you know, get women into a point where they have to work and full time, even when they have kids, and then they have the stupid daycare agenda, because they want to destroy the family. They don't want people to have kids. If they do, they don't want them to be brought up properly. When we all understand our parents and grandparents on one salary, they earned, you know, a decent living and they were able to afford basic living. This is a big problem because you can't run or hide from this. I mean, you know, Florida, things are doing really well. There's a lot of good things going on, but let's face it, the cost of living is terrible. Some of it's because everyone's moving there, but it's just awesome. I mean, you're stuck with the same economy. And it all gets back to the Federal Reserve. During the 130 years from 1784 until the creation of the Federal Reserve, price levels were pretty much stable. They were flat. But then during the past 109 years, but really the bulk of it since the 70s when they completely took us off the gold standard, inflation's gone up 3,000%. In other words, since its inception, Federal Reserve policies have led to the decline of over 95% of the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar. You look at the jobs numbers are out today and they reflect the GDP numbers, where it's so bad that paradoxically there's some decent numbers, meaning that for 95% of the public, it's stagflation. It feels like it's contracting, and it is. Jobs are being lost, growth is contracting, and the cost of living is up the wazoo. But ironically, they're able to post some decent job numbers and some, you know, decent, you know, 3% GDP growth, because it's the very government spending that creates the inflation is propping up, you know, the economy, because one of the components is government spending, which is a joke. Consumer spending is even more because it's so unaffordable, so they're spending more, and it's all being put on the credit card with record credit card debt now, and that's really where the rubber is going to meet the road with this falling apart. And then with the jobs, it creates record government jobs. That's part of it. And then also, as some of you might have seen, full-time jobs are down 151,000 for this month or February, and 51,000 new jobs are part-time. And as we've noted, this is a pattern throughout the last year and a half, that we're having a record number of part-time jobs, a record number of multiple job holders. That's not coming from entrepreneurism, organic growth, upward mobility. That's people desperately taking on second and third jobs just to afford living. This is the demonic economy that COVID cemented. This is the Great Reset, concentrating that power in the hands of seven corporations, basically, so that, you know, and they determine the S&P and the stock market. That's why the stock market's record high, does nothing for us, props up GDP, does nothing for us. And it's all by design. Okay? So the answer is not socialist populism, like some other fake, you know, just mindless people on the new right want to go towards, but free market populism. And we all know the solution. Okay, we all know it's the money. We all know it's the currency. We all know it's the fiat. But, you know, anything we try to do is too transformational. You'll never get the support for it. Constitutional amendments. You know, for example, like I've been advocating for years abolishing all federal taxation, making it that the states do it, and then the feds have a flat tax on the state revenue, and it reorients, you know, states and the relationship with government. But what if I told you, by simply pulling the rug out from the Federal Reserve with the control that we have in red states, we could create a parallel universe to collapse their system and create this kind of Noah's Ark lifeboat from the sinking Titanic? There is a trend, a positive trend. Now, you know, we're not getting a lot of these passed, but there are a lot of currency bills that are, you know, designed to have red states recognize gold and silver as legal tender. And I think it is legal in about four states. We've recognized that. But the problem is that alone is not enough because, okay, you know, that's great. So you could use gold. Now go get the gold. Practically with your bank accounts and your credit card, how do you make that work practically, that it's usable for mass numbers of people to get off of the fiat and hedge against inflation, keep us on, create our own almost like de facto gold standard without having to change federal laws, change constitutions, even abolish the Federal Reserve, but to create a parallel that collapses them inwards but protects us from being in the area of impact of that collapse. So with us today is a special guest I've been meaning to have on for quite some time, a new friend of mine, Senator Kevin Allens. He's a state senator in Iowa. freshman term. He's from Woodbury County, all the way in the far west of the state. He served in the Iowa National Guard for 27 years, retiring as a colonel. And he by the way, carried my bill, you know, that we were pushing a constitutional amendment for individual autonomy from medical tyranny, bodily autonomy. And he has SF-2108, a currency bill that will prompt the state to facilitate bank accounts that you could debit against a debit card to actually pay for things with something backed by gold without having something transformational that is beyond our powers. I believe this is the single biggest force multiplying issue on economy, but really everything flows from that, that is also the most achievable if we get behind this, focus on this, focus in the states. All right, Senator Allens, you heard my filibuster there. I went a little bit longer than I intended. I want to give you the rest of the time. Could you explain these issues? First of all, welcome to the Blaze. These issues are very complex. Explain how your SF-2108 takes this kind of recognizing gold as legal tender to a practical level.
Well, thanks for having me on, Daniel. It's complicated, but it's really, in some ways, it's not, right? We, as you already outlined, we've got a dollar system that is backed by the full faith and credit of the United States, which is really the Federal Reserve. So the way the system would work, it's implemented already. There's a system called Glint Pay, but I'll just explain. Basically, the state would contract with a vault to store gold. We'll start with the Iowa citizens would put dollars into the system. The state would then, on contract, take those dollars, use it to buy gold and store it in a vault. And that would be done on a fee-based system. We would recognize gold as being currency. You would put money in, it would turn into gold. And then you could use it transactionally with a debit card. So you'd get a debit card and you would make purchases using that debit card. And when you made the purchase, it would basically figure out, okay, there's always an exchange rate between dollar and the gold. And it would figure out how many fractions of a gram of gold you would need to make that $10 purchase or whatever that would be, and it would decrement your gold account with those grams of gold or fractions of a gram of gold to make that payment. And the vendor would be paid in dollars. And so it would be just like going to Europe and buying something in the euro today. But the beauty of it is that the state would take on that role, and we would recognize it as currency. So the state would take on that role of storing, securing, and transacting in dollars, but it backed by gold.
So what I just want to make sure I understand the mechanism here. So right now, if you merely just say, okay, it's legal tender. So there's a practical problem. Mm-hmm. I don't have any gold. Where do I kind of get it from? How do you practically pay? Even if you legally make it tender, it's just like, you know, who's going to take gold? Here you're saying the state has to get more active in this. So mm-hmm. I want to open up a bank account at my local bank. And, you know, you pay, typically you have your stuff from your monthly expenses paid mainly from a checking account. You know, usually a lot of it's on the credit card. Ultimately, it gets paid through your checking account. You know, people have $8,000, $10,000, $15,000 at a given time, whatever it is in their checking account. Open up that account. And you're saying that, let's say I put in $15,000 in a checking account. And, you know, I get my salary dumped in there, you know, every week, every month, whatever. And the state, you're saying, would open up a vault, it would be a fee for it, to have $15,000 mm-hmm. worth of gold to back that up? Do I have that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, basically, it's all predicated on, so the concept, I've studied this and working with Kevin Freeman, who wrote the book Pirate Money, he really goes through all of the constitutional precedent and backup for this, but basically it's Article 1, Section 10, but of the U.S. Constitution. But yeah, the state would have a vault. So if you want to buy gold today, you would go on the market and you would buy it, and it would be a commodity, and so you'd pay capital gains if you ever figured out a way to liquidate it. But the problem is you got to store it, you got to secure it, and then you would have to find a buyer in the event that you wanted to convert it back into a tangible or liquid funds to make a purchase, for example. The state would basically take on that role for you. So it lets anybody and everybody on a monthly basis or whatever, put some of their dollars into a gold vault that would be managed and run by the state. So basically it's a hedge against the Federal Reserve, and it just lets the average person diversify and has the benefit of, like you talked about, of putting a tangible asset behind your dollars, which right now are just bits in a computer system.
And in the practical sense, so the beauty of your bill is it recognizes the world we live in. So you have a lot of absolutists mm-hmm. that want to get the state to ban fiat money and, you know, whatever. And look, we'll talk about, you got to walk before you run, but anything you do has to be concurrent with the current system. It's like I tell people who want to start a new party. I've wanted to start a new party forever, but you have to have a middle ground that you kind of glide away from it. And it's a similar thing here that, you know, you the way people live, you can't just disrupt it right away. So here, it's kind of like use as you go. Anyone who wants mm-hmm. to do complete fiat, you still have the same thing. You won't notice the difference. But anyone who wants this, it really would not disrupt anything other than the fee. And I want to get to the math in a minute. But you're saying you'd have a debit card that I go and I pay, you know, okay, I have a $150 grocery bill this week. Okay, so that goes debited out of my account. So I'm now technically having my own gold standard, my own currency backed by gold. It's fiat backed by gold. So I want you to explain for us the math. Well, you know, I didn't ask you to kind of work out the numbers, but if you have it roughly, you know, they claim the CPI has gone up 21% since 2021. Really, it feels like it's a lot more. It's manipulated, but let's just say 21%. Mm-hmm. So I have a savings checking account. Have 50,000 sitting in it, okay? Say 50,000 sitting in it. And, or, you know, let's make it easier. Just say 100,000 sitting in it. Right now, if that vegetates, 3 years later, that's worth, you know, 80,000, right? And even less.
Correct.
So what would have happened, do the math for us, had that been backed by gold, explain tangibly what the purchasing power looks like.
Well, I can explain it with, I have an account with a system that implements this. It's just not run by the state. So maybe 6 months ago, I started buying gold. It's a system like we talked about. So you put dollars in and they hold gold on your behalf. So now the value of what you own is going to reflect the price of gold. Well, the price of gold has been rising, but what's really happening is the value of your dollar is declining. Because of inflation, because the real inflation is at least what they're admitting to. So that $1,000 or $100,000 that you, let's just say a year ago, if you had bought $100,000 worth of gold, and by virtue of putting it into this vault, putting it into this system that Iowa would run, and hopefully other states would do as well, it would grow based on the decline in the dollar, frankly. That's what a tangible asset is really reflecting. It's a real tangible asset. So that $100,000 today would probably, I don't have to go back and look, but let's just say over the last year, gold has gone from $1,900 to $2,150 in dollars. So that $100,000 would be worth $120,000. So you just preserve that wealth, just like a landowner today, I mean, or a lot of other commodities. It's the dollar, as the dollar declines, its value in terms of dollars goes up. And it's gone up substantially. And it's rising right now because I think it's increasingly obvious. I mean, if it wasn't obvious already, it's very obvious to people that $35 trillion exponentially growing debt is not going to be repaid. So we are all victims of that.
No, and
frankly, the states are the biggest victim. I mean, states are supposed to be the preeminent government, but we're bidding against another, you know, we're at an auction effectively with a partner, which is the federal government that has a blank checkbook. We can't win that.
So they monopolize the currency in a way that we can't get around it. And what you're saying is this is the least disruptive. I mean, it works off the current fiat system, just backs it by your own personal gold, as much and as little and as many people want to join it. But the idea is, you know, with everything going on now, it would become more popular, you know, because people don't want to liquidate their stuff and just only buy a bunch of gold bars and put in their room.
Mm-hmm.
But here, you're saying is you could have a regular account that you would transact pretty much like fiat, except you probably have to use a debit card instead of credit card. Yep. Frankly, the credit cards give you nothing nowadays anyway in terms of money back. So you're not really losing anything there. And you're right. I mean, you go back to COVID, like right after the lockdowns, I think gold was something like $1,750. So rather than going backwards 20%, you would go forwards at least 20%, and you'd be much more wealthier. I mean, it's just obvious at an individual level. But then describe at a macro level what this would gradually do. Let's say it would take off in 20 red states and it would be very popular. Describe the macroeconomic consequences of that.
Well, at its heart, it lets people not store all of their wealth in a system that is controlled by the Federal Reserve, that is backed by really nothing. So it would create a de facto gold standard again, right? It would let people operate under a gold standard, operate with tangible assets, because right now, again, we, as a state and as entities, we are bidding against a federal government that doesn't have any fiscal restraints on it whatsoever, right? That even the idea of a debt ceiling has been eliminated. So there's no mechanism right now. But people say, well, what if we did this, how would we get enough gold? And they're asking the wrong question. The reality is if you think there's not enough gold, then what you're really saying is there's far too many dollars, right? The price that we are treating, what we're saying the dollar or gold is worth, an ounce of gold is $2,150 right now, and clarity, actually about almost $2,200. But if in fact there's no way to procure enough gold to reflect that, then apparently there's way more dollars in circulation than the reports that are increasingly being eliminated or obfuscated would actually show us. It's not accurate. I believe it's what God says is a system of dishonest weights.
So,
but it's a fraudulent system that we have no way. There's no mark to market for the value of gold, and therefore, what is the value of the dollar?
You're saying this would kind of vet that out, because my next question to you was going to be, wouldn't this spike the cost of gold if you would have all of a sudden, you know, let's say all the similar bills like yours in the red states, we'd get our dream, it would pass. I know you did get a positive recommendation from subcommittee. You did not, unfortunately, mm-hmm. It looks like it died in the full committee this term, and this is the type of thing that's probably going to take us a few sessions, but we got to start now pushing it. But wouldn't it just skyrocket the cost of gold?
Well, if it does, it's a reflection of the fact that the ratio between the dollar and gold is not real. It's not, I mean, the amount of gold in place is not going to change. Right? I mean, it already could. I mean, as the price goes up, it would drive more mining and more discovery and more people participating and trying to obtain gold, but you can't create it out of thin air. And that's the whole point. So the goal is not to get every dollar sitting in a vault in the form of gold. But it is to give people that option. And that's not what the gold standard is about. It's not about, I want to have a vault full of gold. It's, I want to have a money system that has integrity. And I believe
you
I'm
mean
fearful
like,
that it doesn't.
You mean like where we don't have a thing where Home Depot contracts 4 out of the last 5 quarters, but their stock price is record high?
Yeah, well, to your point, like in your opening monologue, you're talking about how we tout these numbers of employment is high and the stock market is up. But using the analogy of the Titanic, sure, the water's rising because they continue to print more and more money. So that makes those things look good. But if the gold is the canary in the coal mine, right? I mean, it is a finite resource that you can't just create out of thin air. And as we're seeing right now, as people get concerned, increasingly concerned about what's happening with the dollar, are we actually just trying to manufacture a crash that we can use to bring in something like a central bank digital currency? That's, I fear, is a possibility. And gold is a really good hedge against that. And not that, again, you don't have to have all your money in gold. You just want to have the ability to do that. And
practically use it. Right now, it's like, okay, I'll have a vault of gold for my retirement here and there. But then, you know, I use fiat. Here, you could actually safely have your bank account backed by gold. And you know, but that would require the state to facilitate it. Now, obviously, what I've always found with these legislatures is they have no problem spending money, right? When they want to focus on something PC, you know, healthcare assistance, education, welfare, there's an infinite amount of money. But whenever we want to do something like fiscal note, it's too much money. So have you ascertained how much of a cost it would be for the state to set up this, facilitate these accounts, purchase the gold, store it, be on top of this. You know, wouldn't that require a whole new agency? How would that look state government-wise?
Well, again, there are systems in place that actually do all of what this would entail. It's just that it's not run by, sanctioned by, and really legitimized by state government. Because as a legislature, state government, I was out talking to the chamber and other local entities, right? They talk to me every day. So we are an entity that is responsive to the people, where I would argue the federal government and certainly the Federal Reserve is not. But I lost my train of thought there. But basically, the state would be implementing a system that's already in place. So we could white label one of these, like Glint Pay. We would just basically, we could contract with them to, okay, we need a vault in our state. We want your system to be run. You know, we'll have debit cards that are going to be issued by MasterCard. We're leveraging existing technology. The cost to the state, and it's a fee-based system, but the cost to the state potentially would just be some really not very significant startup costs. It would pay for itself in fees. And I mean, the worst thing that would happen is our fears aren't realized and actually the dollar is really sound and everything just kind of maintains the status quo and the value of gold goes down somewhat to the price of the dollar. That'd be the worst case scenario that can happen. But the insurance and the hedge and just the potential for preservation of your wealth is all upside.
It really is, especially in the long run.
The charts are back that up. The statistics in the charts over time back that statement
up. But then they'll say, well, won't you risk deflation?
I would argue their policies today are what would cause that. Again, I mean, it's simply, if it exposes the fact that the dollar is not as legitimate as they claim it to be, well, that's not the fault of gold.
No, I mean, and it's better we do this sooner than later. And what you're doing is you're building life rafts. You can never do anything transformational that costs a tremendous amount or, you know, just is unfeasible politically, legally. This I really see as kind of a gliding hand. You slowly take out the capital from the Federal Reserve's monopoly. You offer that alternative that exposes their fraud. Give people alternatives. And over time, we grab back that concentrated wealth, that fiat that is literally just concentrated in a fake stock market, fake economy propped up by very handful of people. I mean, you look at Andrew Jackson's premonition about a central bank and, you know, what we have is that times 100. And, you know, this will foster more rugged individualism, which is really what it was supposed to be. I mean, this really is the original sin of all of this. And I really applaud you actually for being a visionary on this. Do you have other, I'm seeing a lot of like legal tender bills. I don't see a lot like SF-2108. Are there others in other states?
There are. I mean, I haven't, I've been so busy working on the one in Iowa. I haven't looked at the language in every other state. Transactionalgold.com. There's a website. If you go to there's a page on there that has a list of various state endeavors, the language, maybe the sponsor. So that's a good one to look at and maybe go look at the various bills.
Transactionalgold.com. Yeah. So I'm looking at that now. They do, not all the bills are the same, but they do go through them. Looks like there is a bill in Florida that looks pretty similar to yours. And I think this is really, I mean, we got our ConAction teams, and I think this is something to really push for. You know, it's a little bit, takes a little bit of brain cells to understand it, but once you understand it, it's actually in many ways more important than anything else we're pushing. Because again, if we don't deal with this currency issue, we can maybe isolate ourselves culturally, socially, but not economically, and that ultimately leads to socially because, you know, if we're dependent on them and we're all in credit card debt, we can't afford anything, what are we going to do? This is really an excellent, excellent idea. My final question to you is on the legality. So, you know, the problem we have is anything we want to do that's good and based is always screwed with in the courts. talk about the legal, the constitutional moorings of this illegal tender movement.
Well, the fundamental that, again, is Article 1, Section 10. It's essentially a double negative in Article 1, Section of the U.S. Constitution that says a state can only recognize gold and silver coin as legal tender for the payment of debts. So that prohibition or restriction to only recognize, yep. And obviously, I think everybody recognizes that gold and silver has always been considered money. It's only recently that they've tried to discredit that. But gold and silver was money at the start of our country, and as that language talks about, it's foundational, and it is something that the state has a right to do, specifically gold and silver. So anyway, for me, it just comes down to state versus federal sovereignty. We have a federal government that is, in my opinion, is really grotesquely outside of its constitutional boundaries, limitations, you know, those enumerated rights. So the pendulum has swung so far away from state sovereignty, states as in individual states, the 50 states, the United States of America. This, and until we get control of this currency, I don't know how you, again, we'll always be outbid by a federal government, yes, that can just write a bigger check.
It's always a losing game. And the 50-year Republican movement to focus on tax cuts, it's meaningless, because the amount we're losing by the demonic monopolization and concentration that's creating this inflation and diminishing quality of life, garbage products. I mean, a lot of that's the environmental stuff. It all ties together. What they're doing, I mean, you could set taxes at 1%, but eventually we're not going to have anything. We're going to, you know, live in 15-minute cities, eat the bugs, and be happy. So this is really the best hedge against it. And you're absolutely right about Article 1, Section 10. Like, they could throw a tantrum all they want, but it actually says that has to be the currency. If anything, I mean, there are a lot of absolutists in the gold movement that will say states should use that to ban fiat, because they have mm-hmm. to recognize that. Now, again, obviously, politically, it's never going to happen. You know, they'll you know, fight that, and it would be too disruptive in one shot. We don't need to be doing that. I think this is the way that you take it away from some kind of nerdy movement and make it practical for states to, and but states have to put their thumb on it. I mean, you got to interpose mm-hmm. against the feds. It's not going to happen on its own.
Exactly.
And that's why, like, a lot of people, some like pure libertarians, have a lot of faith in the people. But you can't come into 50 years, and in this case, you know, 110 years of government manipulation, and think, oh, it's going to happen on its own without the state kind of steering in another direction. So mm-hmm. I think this is a good middle ground, very well-constructed bill. I want you guys to check out SF2108. And again, what's the website?
Well, transactionalgold.com. You can get some good background details, facts. The book is Pirate Money, written by Kevin Freeman. Well worth a read. I would. It's a simple, fast read, and really goes through more of the fundamentals of the why and why it's constitutional.
Sure. And I've no doubt it is constitutional. I mean, who knows what judges do with it. But again, this mm-hmm. is probably the top priority we need to push in every state. Are you up for re-election?
I am not in 24. I will be in 26.
So you're one of those four-year cycle states.
Yeah.
So where could people follow you on Twitter or elsewhere?
Well, I've got a website, Alliance for Senate, and I've got a Facebook page under the same. I haven't had a huge social media presence, but anyway, and I've got a Twitter page, but I haven't put a ton on it as well. So
you're too old fashioned for that, which we like you. We like that. Well, State Senator Colonel Kevin Allens, thanks so much for being a pioneer on this. This is something we hope to be working with you, our listeners. We have a great Iowa team, and in other states, look out for a similar bill. And if it's not there, let's get one introduced. The first step is introducing. Often takes a couple years, but you know, look at the trendy stuff. It took a few years. It's come to fruition. The sooner we embark on it, the sooner we get it done. And this really is a force multiplier. Thanks so much, Kevin. We'll speak to you later.
Thank you.
So, folks, again, Kevin Allen's a real great ally on medical freedom as well, and he kind of got me into this. I actually did buy the book Pirate Money, and I'll, you know, hope to have the author on soon. But I think these are the sort of innovative ideas we need. I'm just going to tell you, a revolution is not going to be won by white trash. I'm going to be very blunt with you. It's not going to be run by, oh, I got the feels. I just don't feel it. My values are under assault. The libs, I hate them. That's enough. You need a tent. You need a lot of people in the movement. But, you know, all these people, we get Joe Rogan, these guys, oh, because the left is so demonic. So, you know, some of these former leftists come over a little bit. And that's fine to have them in the tent. But it can't be driven by know-nothing. We're not going to evacuate from this without focus, values, smarts, innovation, dedication. And that's the reality. It's going to take thinking like this. We're going to have to work with what is ideal, what is politically achievable, where is it achievable, what needs to be done. And imagine if we had, and I'm going to tell you, if you had a fraction of this robust conservative industry focused on things like this, you'd be shocked at what we can get done. And you find it. Look at guns. In the scheme of where the political Overton window has been on that issue for many years, constitutional carry is pretty radical, right? You might laugh. What do you mean? It's not. But not only is it right to carry, but you don't even need a permit to carry. Historically, it was pretty radical. But we made it not radical because we took the red states and the areas, we fought for it unrelenting. We made it, you know, persona non grata for anyone to oppose the 2A movement. And boom, you got it not just in 20, but 29 states. That's what a movement looks like. We could do this on a lot of issues, but I do really think that this issue, because this is the only credible way I've heard to reset the Great Reset. We talk a lot about the medical aspect of it, but the economic aspect, what do you do when they strategically remade our economy overnight with permanent stagflation, albeit the wealth is concentrated in small hands based on their remaking of the economy? What do you do with that? How do you reverse engineer that? It's a big question, and there aren't easy answers. Well, say, okay, you know, throw the bankers in jail, throw the Federal Reserve in jail. You know, I mean, look, we could say all this stuff, but I mean, I think Kevin's saying, look, I mean, this is something that's becoming more popular. States are warming to the legal tender bills, but, you know, if the state doesn't actively get involved and facilitate the purchasing of it and backing accounts so that you could have these debit cards, and he's right. Once they would do that, there are vendors that already exist. You have Texas Bullion, that could make it more popular. It just has to be practical. You know, it's kind of like we talk about with parallel economies. Sometimes you'll have, you know, a vital service, and then you'll have a conservative company come along, but it's not full service. So it's just not practical to change. And you got to find a way to make it that you could live your current life with that system. And I think this is the best one we have there. Anyone who has questions for Kevin, let me know. DanielHurwitz@startmail.com. Let me know if you have ideas to add, subtract, concerns, other things, but we should start getting this moving in the various states. Again, we're always on offense, always looking what we can do. I can't control what my colleagues do. You know, stupid is as stupid does. They're going to continue focusing on what they do, but these are the sorts of ideas that we need to germinate and then find ways we can most expeditiously, swiftly, stably implement them. But again, I mean, this is going to take a focus on the primaries. And, you know, in the Iowa Senate, like he said, they're not up for re-election. But most states, I think the majority, we are going to have state legislative elections. And we need better people. So those of you in states like Wyoming and Idaho and South Carolina, you know, now is game time. Now is game time. We're going to have a few months to work on this. Most states are June's going to be a busy month for a lot of these primaries. Then we'll have it August, some even before. This is when to get it done. But the notion that we're just going to wait for Biden to just embarrass himself and Trump's going to ride in and save us, both in terms of A, the ability to even win, and B, what the hell do you think you're going to get? By the way, do you think Trump would ever back an idea like this? He is obsessed with the stability of the stock market and the bankers and the Federal Reserve and the cheap fiat. He would never, ever back this. In fact, my fear is if Trump were president, he would actively, this is a great example of negative efficacy, he would actively get Republican governors to oppose this idea. And that's the problem. Because even if Trump were an amazing, even if we had DeSantis times 10 as president, I still would have no faith in the long term of saving the federal fiat system, the federal economic system we're now neck deep in, that somehow we're going to save that. You need to be doing all these. There is not a single thing that I'm doing differently now that Trump won the primary versus if DeSantis would have won. We need to be doing all of these things, except the difference is one would have been tailwinds. The other is going to be headwinds. It is what it is. But we need a movement to focus on the primaries, state legislative ideas that are force multipliers to create state sovereignty, alternative governance, alternative economic systems, parallel legal systems as much as we can. Again, you got to be smart about it. You know, if you just bray at the moon like, oh, let's go and arrest the FBI, you know what I mean? Like, we can't even do things 10 levels down from that. So we're not there. You gotta see what has the best bang for buck that's achievable, you know, because otherwise you're just not being helpful. We're all about outcomes, not posturing. We all love ourselves some posturing, but we don't have the luxury to posture with a sinking Titanic. You just gotta do what works. And that's where we're at now. But yes, it would help if my colleagues would throw up a little bit of a get off my lawn message to Trump so it stops some of this future business of him taking the side of the bad guys on primaries, on policy, on legislation. Because I promise you, if we don't change our relationship with him, A, it's going to be hard for him to win, and B, if he does win, boy oh boy, be careful what you wish for. That second term is going to be quite the doozy with the type of people he surrounded himself with at this point. But this is the unvarnished truth. This is a show like none other. It's a movement like none other. We don't have one, so we have to build it from scratch. That's why I need you to send this to every one of your friends and relatives. Folks, let's do this. Let's champion righteous ideas. Never forget, you got to strike while the iron's hot. You got to be clear about evil and mean it. Not posture it, but do it. Ecclesiastes 8:11. Hope you guys have a terrific weekend. God bless y'all, and thank you for listening.